Atheist Nomads, episode 322, Camp Nomad in the Mormon Corridor.
The podcast you're about to listen to includes cursing and talking about hoo-haws. Please be advised.
Welcome to another episode of Atheist Nomads. I am Dustin. Lauren is here, but not on the microphone at the moment. She will be later. She's snuggling Kylie at the moment. We do have Lily on microphone. She's not going to say anything. And we have Josh.
Hello.
And Joel.
Hello.
Oh, there's Lily.
There's Lily.
So how are you guys liking Camp Nomad so far?
I'm not outside, so I can't complain too much. No, it's it's really a lot more than I expected. So I'm digging it.
I'm being treated well. I like it a lot.
That's not how we told you to say it.
I'm having a good time.
Yeah, and today we went to the Wolf and Grizzly Discovery Center in West Yellowstone, where we met up with another listener there, and he showed us around a little bit, and that was really cool to see the grizzlies and the wolves and birds of prey and otters.
Yeah, the kids had a lot of fun with that.
Oh, yeah. And Trent, we should give him the actual shout-out. Trent, thank you so much for that. That was awesome. We even got to see where the results of the test of various garbage and food storage bear safety. They do some of that testing there, and they had it on display, and that was really cool to see.
A lot of mangled coolers and dumpsters, and
how well it doesn't work in some cases.
Right. Yeah. The big takeaway I got from it is if it's not like quarter inch or half inch steel, it's not keeping a grizzly out.
Well, yeah, it's a mild suggestion at best.
Yeah.
Bear resistant.
All right, guys, that was a terrible intro for Camp Nomad. It's awesome here, guys. We're in Island Park. It's been raining almost nonstop.
She's holding us here against our will. Don't believe it.
But despite that, we still managed to have delicious food, delicious company. And
that sounds dirty.
We're eating the company?
Yes.
Oh, God.
Yeah, secret's out, guys. Donner, party of seven. And West Yellowstone was a lot of fun. That Discovery Center had a lot more to it than I thought it was going to have.
Right, yeah.
I was expecting, a feeble-looking bear and, a couple of, tame wolves. Yeah, the wolves are pretty tame. They're all bred out of Montana, apparently, but no wild wolves. For obvious reasons.
Right. But wild wolves don't do well in captivity.
The bears were cool. Yeah. We got to see two of them, Spirit and...
101.
101. And 101 is 37 years old.
Yeah, apparently the oldest or close to the oldest bear in captivity.
Probably the oldest currently in captivity. Probably the oldest grizzly in the world at present.
Yeah.
Only a couple years away from the record.
Yeah.
So that's super impressive.
Yeah, so I'm going to have to follow them on Facebook now and mourn 101 when she finally passes away. Just inevitable. But yeah, and Trent was also awesome. Trent got his tickets in, and we got to see him do a presentation on a rough-legged hawk and a saw-wet owl. And if you do not know what a saw-wet owl looks like, please look it up. Oh my God, it's so cute.
Yeah.
It is like if elves were owls... You get a saw-wet owl.
Now I need to look it up because I missed that part with Leo.
No, fairies can ride these owls. They're so tiny and fluffy, and it was adorable.
Real, you know?
Weighs 4 ounces.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Now I'm looking it up.
No, I'm taking pictures of Kylie because she's currently wearing the bags for the microphone on her head, and she looks like she's about to go off in the Navy.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. I've definitely really enjoyed it. Josh and Danielle, we know pretty well locally, but Joel and Trent were both people that we hadn't met before, and it's always nice getting to meet listeners and putting faces to the void.
It's been a lot of fun talking to you guys.
Yeah, I was really glad that you were able to come up. I'm suspecting that you voted for Island Park early on.
I did.
Yeah, Ogden, Utah is not that. Not too rough. Daryl, unfortunately, couldn't make it. Daryl! That's what I've been saying all weekend. His farm equipment broke down, so no Canadians. No Canadian representation. But it was still fun. And, thank you guys for come into my family cabin and thanks. Not totally wrecking it.
Well, looking not at over you, yet, Lily. Right?
Well, it is looking kind of messy at the moment. There are 3 children under the age of 5.
Yeah.
Yeah, they haven't poor destroyed Joel. Any of the walls.
Joel
though,
had no so. Idea what he was doing.
We're all right. Well, and he slept the best, so I don't feel too bad.
He was the only one sleeping alone, so.
Yeah, yeah. That was a good choice.
I feel like you guys are jealous now.
Yeah, so now yeah. You're going to have to just
there's
mention
other beds
that.
In there, maybe, you know?
Mention that to your wife. She's like, sleeping alone is nice. I should do it more often.
It's a sleep vacation.
Sleepcation.
Everybody needs to have that once in a while. Just kick your partner out to the couch for one night. Take up the whole bed.
Yeah.
Or even better, do a hotel staycation. That's all I got.
Okay. Let's go ahead and move to Dustin off the degree. We're going to talk about...
a subject very close to home.
Yes. Pretty close to where we are right now.
It's a geography joke.
It is where we are right now is the Mormon Corridor. It is stretches from L.A., basically L.A. to Island Park.
Oh, we're at the far end.
Yeah, we're on the northern end of it. Basically, it follows I-15.
As you can tell from the drive-up soda shed and not the drive-up coffee shed down the street.
And the greater... Now, so the main Mormon corridor is more Las Vegas to Island Park.
Okay.
The greater Mormon corridor can actually spread as far as parts of Mexico to parts of Alberta.
Yeah, because there's quite a few areas in Mexico that were...
and Canada.
Colonized?
Settled.
Yep.
Yeah.
So settled, I'm, pioneered. Yeah, I don't know.
So a little bit of description here. What do you mean by corridor? Is that where they're coming from going to? What?
It's just a strip of territory that has more Mormons than anywhere else.
Is this the place I've heard referred to
damn,
as Mormon?
Damn, why did I move from Texas?
Yeah. It definitely could be. Yeah.
Mormondor. Yeah.
And it's kind of equivalent to the Bible Belt.
Yeah.
But Mormon.
Well, he Joseph Smith kind of envisioned a kingdom out west here.
The state of Deseret.
The one to, yeah.
Right. So that is what we get to next is the state of Deseret. This was something that Joseph Smith, or Brigham Young actually was the one who proclaimed it. They had a de facto, they set up a government to run it. They created laws and claimed everything from nearly all of present day Utah. Nearly all of present-day Nevada, a big chunk of California, parts of Oregon, parts of Idaho, parts of Wyoming, Colorado, New Mexico, and Arizona.
Wow.
Now, who were they claiming this from? Was this something the government was recognizing, or was this just a, this is
oh,
ours?
Hell no.
They made this declaration right after the Mexican-American War was completed, and the territory was ceded to the United States, and they said, all right, we're going to set up a government, and we're going to claim everything that's not... definitely California. So a whole lot of uninhabited territory.
Well, uninhabited by white people. They've
not uninhabited by white people and sparsely populated.
Sparsely populated in general because it's a freaking desert.
Right. Yes. Yeah. It's the great the exact territory they claimed was the Great Basin and the Colorado River Basin, which is a lot of territory.
It is.
This, of course, was not recognized. It did get a little bit of traction with the president at the time because it would have consolidated a lot of territory into one state and would have cut down on how many fights over whether it be a slave state or a free state they'd have to have.
Plus, I imagine this would be too much power concentrated into one.
There was also that issue.
Fringy group, right? Yeah.
So ultimately, it went nowhere. Once it got to the U.S. Congress, they... didn't even take it seriously at all. They did eventually create the Utah Territory, which was modern-day Utah and parts of Nevada. So everything north of what's Arizona and New Mexico and west of California. When that territorial government was established, Brigham Young was made governor, and he transferred all of the laws of the state of Deseret into being the laws of the territory.
How about that?
Yeah, that worked out nicely for him, huh? Suspiciously nicely.
Yeah. Then starts the colonies. So as Mormons would, arrive after that initial settling of Salt Lake, they would be directed by Brigham Young and his agents. And in some cases, it was Brigham Young himself going out to meet a wagon train and say, all right, you're going to go there, and you're going to go there, and you're going to go there, and you're going to go there. And they set up, in some cases, brand new towns filled with Mormons. In other cases, they would go to already established towns and put some Mormons. Their biggest goals was to get resources, mining, lumber, and farming. The minor goal was converting people. And the reason why the biggest goal was extraction of natural resources is because if you're wanting to create a country, you need to have natural resources.
Right.
And the West has lots of thumb and not a lot of others.
Also probably plays into our power.
That was well spoken.
Natural resources equal money. Money, mm-hmm. equals,
the money
power.
Equals power.
There you go.
Oh, yeah.
My mouth was full of Oreo.
It's funnier when your mouth is full of something.
So some of these colonies were established with just Americans moving who had converted to Mormonism in Illinois or Missouri or somewhere else that the Mormons had been and were just migrating later. In other cases, it was like Lauren's ancestors who they sent missionaries out to convert people and have them move to Utah only to be sent to not Utah. To set up colonies.
Be deployed again somewhere else.
Uh-huh.
Yep, that's why Southeast Idaho is so Mormon. Because they sent colonies of, well, at that point, mostly immigrants up there to establish a little Mormon colony. And that is my family is proudly descended from the lad, which, yes, does mean sick. So I don't know why they decided to settle in an area called Malad Valley, but so be it.
I'd probably to try that. And keep white people out, but it didn't work.
That would have to be kind of a bummer after undertaking that huge journey that they still talk about. I can't imagine getting all the way out here and then just being told, okay, you're not done yet.
Yep. And being,
you need to go to Sick Valley.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But these, like in the case of my family, they're coming from the coal mines of Wales, where they're dirt poor, work long hours, backbreaking work. They can't feed their families. And then these guys show up who are clean and fairly wealthy and say, well, you can have land. You can have women, and you can have a stipend. You just have to come over and be, you know, follow our rules. For a lot of people, that is a major upgrade.
Mm-hmm. Now, some of these major colonies were specifically to try to claim more territory.
Right, try to populate them, you know, and say, well, we're already here.
Because the plan was definitely for Utah to be a Mormon-controlled area, and they figured the more Mormons they could get in various places, the more territory they could get Congress to give them. And so they wanted Idaho, at least eastern Idaho. They wanted most of Nevada, if not all of it. They wanted northern Arizona. There are what is now suburbs of Phoenix that are heavily Mormon communities. Eastern Idaho is more Mormon than most of Utah.
Way more than Salt Lake City.
Yeah. The country tends to be pretty concentrated, from what I understand.
Mm-hmm.
Areas like Preston.
Right.
Yeah.
And Rexburg.
That they're not just Mormon, they're super Mormon.
Mm-hmm. So these colonies had numerous reasons behind them. They're all pretty creepy when you look at it from a modern standpoint of you've got this one religion that wants territory, and it's going to try to be setting up more territory by converting people and then having them move to territory.
There's not a lot of instances where you can refer to a group of anything, I don't care what it is, an animal even, that sets up colonies and sends out to other areas to spread. Like, that doesn't sound good. That sounds like plague tactics,
Oh, I was going to say, if anything, it sounds like insects.
Yeah.
But they don't do it on purpose.
But in the frightening way.
The Mormons descended on the land like a swarm of locusts.
Bum, bum, bum.
Have you seen a Mormon cricket? Those things are nasty.
I think that was named after them as an insult. I might be wrong, but I think.
It'll be true for tonight.
All right, so then by the late 1880s, most of the colonies, and there were over 400 colonies they set up.
Now, some of them were in Utah, but not all. But it was over 400 colonies. By the time we got to 1890, when Utah became a state, and part of that was giving up polygamy, they set up colonies outside of the United States.
So the ones who didn't want to give it up could...
Screw your laws.
Yeah. So that included...
I would say we want more women, but they didn't want women. They wanted girls. So that's beside the point.
Nothing creepy about that.
Nope. They were chosen by the prophets themselves.
Yeah.
So for these colonies, they set up... Most of the Mexican colonies were near the Sierra Madre Mountains in northern Mexico. There were some also in Baja, but mostly in Chihuahua and Sonora. They're all within 200 miles of the U.S. border. And initially, the Mexican government was very opposed to this. But Brigham Young made a trip down to Mexico and met up with Porfirio Diaz, the Mexican dictator at the time, and convinced him that this was something that'd be good for Mexico, to let them buy this land and...
Let us bring money and people to your community.
Uh-huh.
And then we'll seclude ourselves and not give you anything.
So they named some of these colonies after Diaz.
How thoughtful.
Uh-huh.
Flatter him.
I just made a quadruple decker Oreo just to let you guys know.
This is very important. I like that.
That's nice.
And they also set up some colonies in Alberta and British Columbia up in Canada. And in all of these cases, it was to try to get polygamous Mormons out of the U.S. so they could avoid federal prosecution. That would be for the ones that didn't just move out to more sparsely populated areas, or the ones that just didn't talk about it as much while they continued to do it.
Yeah, there's more in northern Utah than I understood there were, because we've all seen the ones on TV that you know, live down on the Arizona border.
Those guys are so scary.
But I didn't know there were so many.
I didn't
up
know
north,
they were here.
Sort of looking and, you know, dressing like normal people and kind of blending in.
They're like us, but different.
Only different. That's right.
And not, in some cases, Canadian.
In some cases, Canadian, yeah.
They look like us, but they're different.
So Mitt Romney was, his father was born in one of these colonies.
Yeah.
One of the ones in Mexico. And that is, and then Mitt Romney's father ran for president, and nobody made a big deal at that. Well, there was a little bit of a deal made about the fact he was Mormon. Nobody made a big deal about the fact he was born in Mexico because his parents were American. So he was automatically, naturally an American citizen.
That seems like mudslinging, you know.
Oh, how times have changed.
Right. Yeah.
You know.
Now it seems quaint.
Gold mine that. Wow.
Yeah. So yeah, these colonies, they're weird, they're creepy, they're interesting, and that's all I've got on that.
It also explains a lot of the anti-government feelings you see in the West.
Oh, yeah.
That and the Civil War. Actually, there's so many reasons why that exists. Never mind.
Well,
they all.
And a lot of these colonies in Idaho were specifically Southerners that the Mormons were sending up.
Oh, yeah.
It seems like people are more likely to have views like that the further they live away from populations.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see a lot of separatists and people trying to form weird groups in a big city usually.
No, it's always these little farming communities where you all kind of talk the same.
Mm-hmm.
Talking like the stuff that you talk about is the same. I was talking about echo chambers. Not that they talk like with the same accent. That doesn't make... I'm going to shut up now.
Maybe we just need larger groups of people to keep each other honest.
Yeah. Well, and there's also really good data that you need larger groups of people to keep yourself sane.
Yeah.
Suicide rates correlate directly with...
Isolation.
Actually, inversely with population density.
Looking at you, Montana and Alaska.
And Greenland.
One of the reasons that solitary
Greenland
confinement is such a big deal as far as mental health goes.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard that anyway.
Yeah.
It has a great effect on mental health.
Whereas if you're in New York, you've got, you know, New York City, there's thousands of people in some cases in the same building.
Yeah.
Yeah, and look how they turned out.
And let's go ahead and move on to some news. The Kenai Peninsula Borough Assembly in Alaska had an invocation from a representative of the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster.
May his noodly appendage reach out and touch you.
Yeah. Each and every one.
Barrett Fletcher wore a colander on his head as he led the assembly in prayer to the Flying Spaghetti Monster in opening their local government meeting.
Sounds amazing.
This is something they've been working on for a long time to get to happen, and it has now finally happened.
Yeah, it seems like something they'd have to fight for.
Economists have studied the value of thoughts and prayers. Because if anybody's going to figure out whether or not anything's worth something, it's going to be economists.
It's true.
Insurance actuaries would be the other, but they look more at value. But yeah, they have found that thoughts and prayers do have a monetary value.
Oh boy.
Yep. The way they did this was by asking people after a disaster how much they would pay to have someone pray for them. And that included general public, members of their church, a priest or pastor. Each one was given $5 that they could spend on this. So it was limited as to how much. They found that prayers from a priest were worth $7.17 to the average Christian in need. So they'd pay more than they were budgeted. Prayers from other Christians were valued at $4.36. And thoughts from another Christian were only valued at $3.27.
Wow. All right. I'm sorry. I've got to stop you for a moment. So they found people that had just went through a disaster.
Hurricane Florence.
Okay.
Last year in North Carolina. Yeah.
A natural disaster has just destroyed all your shit. Mm-hmm. So let's all take this and do this exercise together. And they gave them an imaginary $5 to spend on the thoughts and prayers of someone else doing something about a real thing that's happening to them.
Yep.
And people were willing to pay that imaginary $5 more or less to get thoughts and prayers towards fixing a thing that had really fucking happened to them.
Yep.
Are we serious, America?
No. Okay.
Yeah.
That was how the Christians responded. Atheists and agnostics in the study
asked for a real fucking $5.
Yeah. I'd like to get in the boat and get out of here, please.
They found that on average, they were willing to pay a priest $1.66 to not pray.
Nice.
They were willing to pay $3.54 for a member of the laity to not pray for them.
Not pray.
What strikes me as interesting is you'd be willing to pay more for a random Christian to not pray for you than a member of the clergy.
And I think the last one to that probably wasn't listed is that a solid $5 for the person asking this question to go the fuck away.
Yeah. How much for piggybacks? Just get me out of the disaster zone.
Oh, wow. Man. Yeah. This is just, it's hilarious.
It's hilarious pseudoscience.
Yeah. But at least we now know what thoughts and prayers are worth.
And for Christians that might be listening, I take PayPal and I'll send you my thoughts and prayers.
So. And George Kritikos is the mayor of Clearwater, Florida. He is a Republican and a member of the Greek Orthodox Church. And he has finally concluded that his prayers aren't working.
No.
No.
So he's calling for a ban on military-style assault weapons, high-capacity magazines, expanding background checks, putting in a red flag law.
Is this what he was praying for?
Stop making sense.
He kept praying for God to stop gun violence. And God chose not to stop gun violence. So now he wants to take actions to stop gun violence.
No. By that logic, if you want to go down that path, that means that God invented this and wants this to happen.
Right.
That's the only logical conclusion.
Okay, so he's Greek Orthodox. He's not predestinarian. I made a poor choice of words that would be apply more to a Calvinist.
I'm sorry, I had to quibble with you.
But, I feel like he'll be ostracized by pro-gun people.
He will.
But Jesus said he needed to.
He's a Republican that's not towing the NRA line.
Yeah.
So yes, he will be in trouble for this.
The logic is creeping into his head. He doesn't know what to do. At least he has the courage to say something.
Yeah.
I'll give him credit.
And it's not like he's asking for a ban on all guns. It's just
assault rifles.
No, he's suggesting reasonable things. There's a reason these things used to be not available to the general public. They don't pass the what would the average idiot do with this.
Right.
I slightly disagree on that because it doesn't really matter if you have guns, don't have guns. Yes, there's the potential for more violence, but if you took it all away and had only rocks, people would still kill each other.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Absolutely.
But with a rock, you're going to have a hard time killing more than one person.
This is true. Potential for violence is greatly decreased, but it doesn't change.
It definitely affects the suicide rate, from what I understand. I mean, seriously, I'm joking, but I think the having it ready at hand,
it makes it easier.
Up the likelihood that something will happen in your house, or you're more likely to commit suicide than you would be.
A gun has a convenient point-click interface.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas a rock or drowning yourself or any of those other things does not.
Of course. And yeah, you're right. People would still do it. It's just hard to imagine that it would be as prevalent as it is now. I wouldn't pretend to know the answer, but it seems like, much like our Swedish friends, that a comprehensive, logical, solution is the best way to go.
Australia would be a good example on a place that had a rise in gun violence and mass shootings and decided they wanted that to stop.
Yeah.
And they did a massive gun buyback and made it really hard to buy guns. And their violence rates have dropped.
Yes.
And mass shootings haven't happened since then.
That's the
big one.
Yeah.
I was like, their violence level is about the same, but again, their mass shootings way down.
Yes.
It doesn't make it impossible. It just makes it far less likely.
Yeah. Right.
It's kind of like still being able to die in a modern and amazing motor vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
You can still find a way to get
it's
dead.
Very fucking difficult, but you can get it done.
They've just greatly reduced.
Right. Yeah. I'm not worried about getting gunned down by a drug cartel. That's not part of my threat model.
Yeah.
I am concerned that somebody might shoot up my place of business.
The supermarket you're at?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just some random jackass.
Yeah.
And yeah, common sense approaches to...
Common sense. Yeah. I mean, I always think of it like, I call it the dump truck test. I mean, you're free. Anyone's free to have one and drive one, but you still have to pass the test and prove that you're competent. And there's some process to try and weed out
the religion
doing this thing or that thing.
The religion part of it just blows me away because you stop and think about it. It's like, no, it's assault rifles. No, it's everything. So this either means that your God, your deity, your whatever wants this to happen because it's inherently ingrained in people, or they're not involved.
Yeah. We're starting to see Republicans take it seriously. That is a step in the right direction. We need more of that. We need... What would be the biggest thing would be for the NRA to go back to their roots of promoting sporting rifles.
Yeah.
Right. Rather than just being reflexive and digging in on everything.
But that would probably require them severing their ties with Russia.
Really?
Oh, you've missed that?
I have.
The NRA has gotten huge contributions.
Russian
oligarchs.
They were sort of infiltrated, I think.
Yeah, I knew there was the Russian infiltration and all that, but there's a lot of money behind it.
Yeah.
Oh,
hundreds of millions of dollars.
No shit.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Weird.
All right. Let's move on to a topic that I don't think we covered before on the show, but is relevant to the geographical area we're at right now. And that is an idea somebody had to prevent a supervolcano eruption from Yellowstone.
We have talked about this once, but it's awesome. So has there been an update on that?
No, it's just we're here.
Yeah. Yeah, we're in the Island Park caldera, which is a hot spot that was created by the movement of the Yellowstone magma. So all throughout the Snake River Valley, you'll see little calderas, and Island Park is one of the bigger ones because we're close.
Mm-hmm. And so the idea would be basically to drill into Yellowstone from not far from here and pump the Snake River from, in some cases, from here into the magma chamber.
Doesn't that create explosions? I mean, that's like in Hawaii when lava hits water or pockets of water underground, it creates these violent explosions.
Yeah, that's a...
It could go good, and it could go really, really bad.
That's a very logical...
that's the other option.
Observation.
Stop making sense.
Lily. No.
So the idea would be that you just cool it down, and because...
Just chill out. Yeah.
The water would...
It's not like it's massive.
Yes, the water would have violently vaporize, but that'd be by absorbing ridiculous amounts of heat that it could then transfer out of the magma chamber. That ignores the fact that you're trying to take ridiculous amounts of heat out of the Earth and put it into the atmosphere.
Yeah.
We don't want more heat in the atmosphere.
Like we don't already have a problem with that.
Don't take water where water is an issue.
Yeah, fresh water in the West.
Jesus. Yeah.
What's the saying? Whiskey's for drinking and water's for fighting.
Yeah.
I learned that in Colorado.
I like that. That's good.
And then, of course, the biggest issue would be the 5% chance that doing so would cause the supervolcano to erupt.
5%? Yeah. I would put it higher than that.
They estimated 5%.
It either will or it won't. We'll say 50-50.
Based on super good science.
Super good science.
Based on super good science.
It says that, right here, good.
That's a stamp I need. Super good science. Stamped.
If it starts with you guys,
I also need
a
mediocre. Also need a mediocre science.
And terrible science. Got A, B. Yeah.
Gotta have the stretch.
All right. So then on a follow-up on talking about the vaping crisis last week, New York has joined Michigan in banning flavors outside of tobacco flavors. That is really bad for having it be an option for smokers getting off of cigarettes.
So maybe you can cover a little more, because this is something that got mentioned, but I didn't really understand the full...
All right, so this is, for people who don't remember or didn't listen to last week's episode...
Stopped listening when he started talking about vaping. Yeah.
Or that.
Might have done that. That might have happened.
So...
I don't even remember what I said.
There have been at least 400 or so cases with at least 6 deaths. With vaping-related lung issues that are being caused by lipid-laden macrophages.
Yeah.
And it is looking more and more like the biggest issue, and especially with the fatalities, is that it's vitamin E acetate that's being used as a thickening agent for THC vapes on the black market.
Yeah, you walked through that process in your last podcast.
It's not a nutritional thing, vitamin E acetate. It's an industrial thickener.
It was just weird to me how they were thinning thickening it or something like that.
Right.
I didn't really understand, you know, or maybe it wasn't explained, but if it was caused by what it was that they were vaping, like the liquid, or if this was something about, you know, the crazy people, you know, we all see it, the guys that modify their coils and they vape like fucking dragons, you know, is this quantity? Is this what it is? What really causes it?
There isn't a solid answer on that. It is looking more and more like the issue is these black market THC vape cartridges where they have thinned it out because of supply chain issues, and then they use vitamin E acetate to thicken it back up because people buying it try to, having no other way of gauging the quality of the product, look at how thick it is.
They equate thickness with quality.
Yep.
Gotcha.
That I learned from you because I'm learning a lot here.
That I wasn't aware of that until I came across.
This all strikes me as a non-vapor. It seems like a sort of a wild, wild west period where I'm not really sure what's regulated, if anything, and everybody's just sort of trying something.
Yeah, there is definitely a bit of that. It is the legal nicotine vaping market is under FDA regulation.
Okay.
But the regulations haven't been figured out yet.
Yeah, the reason why I was asking is that I see a lot of people that are messing with their coils and so forth and making their own units and running their own temperatures, which doesn't seem like a thing, but in my head, I know that you're meant to be vaporizing this, and if you're changing that, that changes what you're getting dramatically.
In addition to the sketchy ingredients,
in addition to what the hell are you putting in this thing, and what are you vaping now, even if it does function in all of the ways that it should.
Right. Mm-hmm. No, I am somebody who I have mixed my own juice for a long time. I've built my own coils for a long time. I have never gone to ridiculously low resistance coils. That's just stupid to me, and I don't want to be chucking giant clouds. I like to be able to see in the room that I am in.
I also enjoy that you don't do that. That way I don't have to make fun of you to your face.
Right. I also don't, like, outside, if I'm outside vaping and I have my phone, I like to be able to see the screen.
You know, you're in your car and you can still see out the window, things like that, yeah.
Yeah, it's always fun to drive behind somebody who's doing that.
Yeah.
They roll down their window and you think there's a fire and you're like, oh shit, I have an extinguisher. Oh no, they're just a moron.
3 seconds till I taste whatever. And there it is.
Now, so there is the element of, there are people who, like me, have done their research and they know what they're doing when they're customizing products and using products that are designed to be customized. And then there are the people who don't. Well, and they create bombs.
And there's also a level to that, even, because it you know, only at that certain level you were saying is it FDA regulated.
Mm-hmm.
If you're getting stuff that isn't in that FDA regulated, you're making the assumption that it really is what it says it is.
Mm-hmm.
And you're mixing with it based on that. And you may be doing making all the right moves, but what you're making still has whatever the hell in it.
Right. And now there is, regulation is a good way of assuring quality. The whole reason the FDA exists is to avoid adulterants in medications. To make sure that you have known purity and potency and all that.
Like the whole difference between medications and supplements.
Yeah. There are a lot of industries that do a good job of regulating themselves, and the nicotine vaping industry has done a good job of that.
Okay.
Where it's there's a lot of activists and enthusiasts in the community that pay very close attention to what's going on. There are people that are doing studies and research into stuff. They're doing analysis of it all. And people have been doing their best to figure out how to do this right without the regulation.
I think some of the larger, like Juul and some of those, are somehow linked to the old tobacco establishment.
Mm-hmm. Juul has, one of the big tobacco companies bought into Juul.
So with that,
I think like Mark 10 is Marlboro.
With that probably comes awareness of how the system already works and maybe things to stay away from. And
yeah.
So their stuff is a lot more...
The stuff you're going to see in gas stations is taking advantage of tobacco supply chain,
right,
which the big tobacco companies control.
And they're probably more wary of stepping over lines.
They are. Yeah, they are.
Than a guy in his garage who's trying to thicken his weak stuff.
Yeah. And so, okay, so there's already the difference between that and the black market THC. You aren't going to be using a thickening agent if you're just mixing a nicotine vape, because there's no benefit in doing that. You just adjust the PG-VG ratio if you want to make it thicker. And the only reason why you really want to make it thicker is to control juice flow through the wicks. And if you want fatter clouds, you can do higher VG and get fatter clouds.
But basically, the only reason that anybody would be trying to thicken them synthetically is if they were making subpar liquid.
Weak sauce.
Weak, you know, or cutting it somehow, mm-hmm, and then using that to increase the volume of it.
Which is where the black market THC cartridges come into play, where there isn't sufficient supply to meet demand. So they are cutting, and that's because of markets legalizing within the U.S. And so there's less supply for the black market. So the black market suppliers are cutting it. And
to drop their price to...
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Wow.
And then they thicken it to make it look like it's still the same product when it's not. One of the things that is ironic is the more you ban with nicotine vaping, the more you're going to drive into the black market, with the potential of creating the same thing all over again.
Right.
Well, It also strikes me, you know, just because I'm just learning about this because I didn't pay attention the last time. Mm-hmm. But it strikes me that, you know, the damage of this is caused by black market secondhand. It's like, of course, yeah. Getting it off the black market is dangerous. Would you like really impure meth? Please go buy some from, you know, some guy in his basement. It really will be impure, I promise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you look at it, the solution to the current crisis, at least the big bulk of it, is legalize marijuana and create a regulated marijuana market.
Because it kills that overnight.
Yeah.
Yeah. Granted, ending the war on drugs, or at least legalizing marijuana nationwide, would solve a lot of other issues, too.
So many.
But it's not going to happen.
Not anytime soon.
But yeah, not anytime. Yeah.
Bigger money has been sort of gathering behind the pro side. I think, was it Boehner was a speaker, used to be a speaker of the House.
Yeah.
Republican guy. Soon, like 5 minutes after he retired, he started taking money from, I think, a pro legalize it business concern, like a lobby group or something. And that, to me, that was a sign. Like, they're probably going to eventually turn.
I think, you know, like in the next 10 years, it really could be a thing.
Like once the old white dudes are behind it.
there's definitely the money in it. There's definitely the states, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Figuring it out that, yeah, this is something that
they can monetize it. They'll hate it less all of a sudden.
Yeah. Now, this could have been the issue to kind of push that. Because if the narrative had been black market marijuana is prohibition isn't stopping people from using marijuana products and the black market is killing people, we need to legalize. That's not the narrative that has gotten out there. The narrative that has gotten out there is vaping is killing people. We need to ban flavors so that kids don't vape.
Yeah. Literally, I vape so little it isn't even funny. Using a Mark 10 device that I got at a gas station. I do occasionally at work. And literally I had people last week coming up to me and like, oh, that thing will kill you. And I'm like, oh, well, fuck. I better listen to the news, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The market's definitely going to change with the regulatory pressures. It will be interesting to see what's happening. But I have also basically stopped vaping.
For the time being? Are you just waiting to see what happens?
Or? No. I think I'm done with it.
Okay.
And it has nothing to do with this issue directly.
I was going to say, didn't you quit before?
I tried once a couple years ago.
Okay.
And that was very unpleasant.
Well, you've mentioned how it was a bridge for you, but you also mentioned how you weren't sure what this crisis would do to your ability to do it in a not harmful way. And, you know, what your next step would be.
So I'm trying out Swedish snus and nicotine pouches. Nicotine pouches are something that are much newer on the market, created by Swedish snus makers, where it's basically a gum base with powdered nicotine that you absorb through your gums.
Oh.
Does that have the same risks as chewing, though?
No.
Not as, okay.
No.
So it doesn't have the chewing tobacco implications?
It doesn't, no. Right. So chewing, if you look at it realistically, the risk is, there's a continuum. At 100% risk, you've got smoking cigarette. It is all bad. It is very bad. It has numerous horrible, horrible health issues for numerous reasons. Chewing tobacco would probably be at about a 35 on that scale.
Okay.
It is still bad, but nowhere near as bad. And chewing tobacco, because of the way American tobacco makers process their product, are very high in nitrosamine, which are highly carcinogenic.
I was gonna say, that just sounds bad.
Yeah. The way they produce Swedish snus, there is very little nitrosamines, which is makes it so that there is much less risk. And it's something that's been around for 200 years, so long-term risk with it is well known. Slight increase in your risk of diabetes, slight increased risk in pancreatic cancer. And in both cases with those, slight increase in risk doesn't really mean that much. We're not talking double or tripling the risk. It's slight increases.
Right. Certainly the lesser the evils compared to the other options.
Compared to orders of magnitude higher risk of lung cancer,
yeah,
and esophageal cancer, and mouth cancer, and tongue cancer, and cheek cancer, and stomach cancer, and the list goes on and on and on.
Yeah.
Vaping is pretty clearly, with that same scale, it's somewhere in that 5 to 10 range. The evidence is seeming to be pointing towards it being 95% less harmful than cigarettes, so it'd be at about a 5. I suspect in the long term, it's going to be found to be worse than it currently looks, and it'll probably move up to closer to a 10 would be my guess. Still, if it's a tenth as bad as smoking cigarettes, that's a huge win.
Yeah.
Oh, sure. It's still an improvement.
That makes it a vice worth, you know, partaking in occasionally versus, you're cutting years off your life.
Right. Swedish snus is in that 5 to 10 range as well. The nicotine pouches are probably about on par because of the fact that they are virtually identical to nicotine gums.
Just don't sleep with those on.
Yeah. They're just higher nicotine levels than nicotine gums, and just a little bit different formulation. So more effective at actually being satisfying.
Okay.
Because one of the reasons why nicotine gum sucks at getting people off of cigarettes is it's too low of nicotine. It doesn't satisfy you.
Ah.
I think I heard Jack Black joke once about he started smoking so he could get off the gum.
Just like the best approach to fixing the current crisis would be legalizing marijuana, the best approach to fixing some of the issues around cigarettes and youth tobacco usage and the like, let's get rid of the most harmful products and just keep trying to move towards less and less harmful.
Less harm, right.
Take advantage of technology and advances in development.
I think Lauren's emphasized that in the past about harm reduction.
Yeah.
Don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good.
And so by that model, we shouldn't be banning flavored vapes. We should be banning cigarettes. Because in the time period that 400 people have been hospitalized for something even remotely vaping related and 6 people have died, how many thousands have died from smoking related issues?
And been hospitalized.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The dangers are known with tobacco for sure.
And we're not going to get rid of it. We need to just make it not as bad.
Well, yeah, it would be about like if, you know, tequila as an alcohol was 90% worse than every other variety of alcohol and had all of these different associated things with it, but it stayed on the market.
Yeah.
Seems like you have to find a sweet spot. You
know, yeah. Like
To what degree you outlaw and to what degree you mainstream.
Or, you know, refine that shit, something.
Right.
Which, for a good example, in Sweden, around the same time that Nicorette was released on the U.S. market, Sweden started pushing smokers towards using snus. And as a result of that, making it more and more difficult to get cigarettes and easier to get snus and changing people's perception of it from being initially just a poor man's tobacco to the better tobacco, Sweden has become the first country in the world to meet the smoking reduction target, which is fewer than 5% of men smoking cigarettes.
Wow. Go Swedes.
Yeah.
That's
nobody
impressive.
Else has done that.
It sounds like they took kind of a comprehensive approach rather than just overreacting.
They went with the harm reduction approach.
Right.
Realistically, Britain will probably be next. And they are going with a comprehensive, anything possible to get you off of cigarettes is a win.
Well, I know even a lot of Europe, remember Australia, the cigarettes were just fucking outrageous. It was like $25 or something.
It's part of the effort to discourage it.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I don't remember at least if it was just the, you know, American brands, but as I remember, they were all just really, really expensive.
Yeah.
Now, if you just jack up the price, addicts will continue to pay it.
Oh, yeah.
So you're just punishing people for their addiction.
I would assume that's just kind of step one. But
if you jack up the price on the worst and you make it really easy to get something better and encourage people to get something better, that will change behavior.
Right.
Yeah.
Carrot, little stick. Yeah.
Well, yeah. And, you know, even people now, you've got people that hand roll versus buy cigarettes because you can buy tobacco that's used for pipe smoking.
Mm-hmm.
And you pay less tax on it, It's like, I see that you're trying to skip around something, but you're still getting to the same result. If there was no option, then those same sorts of people would go to, you know, snooze or whatever.
Yeah. And then there's also just the angle in me trying to make this switch, because this is something that I've been thinking about for months and been working on trying out for the last probably 2 months. Is Kylie grabbing my vape?
Oh, right.
That's happened too many times. The first time was too many times. And having something that I need to have ready at hand at all times makes that really likely. And that's just not cool.
It makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are these, I mean, this is obviously a personal thing for you, but is this a bridge to something else? For you ultimately in your mind, or is it just something different?
I think it's something different. Based on the evidence I've seen, I am not concerned about nicotine itself, other than the fact that it is addictive.
Right.
We don't want new people starting on addictions, but if you're already addicted, you're already addicted, and it's not really much worse than caffeine. It's definitely not as bad for you as alcohol.
Yeah.
And I don't plan on stopping drinking beer or coffee either. So yeah, we'll see. We'll see long term. All right. Well, that wraps up what we have prepared. Gentlemen, thank you very much for joining me.
Thanks for having us.
It's been a lot of fun having you guys here.
Had a great time.
All right. And listeners, remember, not all those who wander are lost.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Atheist Nomads. You can find show notes and contact information at atheistnomads.com. Follow us on Twitter at Atheist Nomads. And like us on Facebook at facebook.com/atheistnomads. Please subscribe to the show in iTunes, Stitcher, or your podcatcher of choice. And while you're there, feel free to leave us a review. Theme music is courtesy of Sturdy Fred. Until next time, this has been the Atheist Nomads.